Right, so in Parshas Kises, he talks about the concept of Ben Sorah Amorah, a very unique situation, where it's so unique some say it never even happened and never will happen. But it's very strange that it talks about someone who does, he steals from his parents wine and meat, and a lot of specific stipulations, that even though he's innocent now, but they assume he's on his way to live a dangerous, a very unhealthy life, not only unhealthy for himself, unhealthy for the society. He's going to go around being a murderer, a drug addict. So therefore, the Gemara has a very interesting concept. Nidon al shem sofo. We judge him on what's going to happen. Even though better yomuz zakai, die in a pure state, than to be... than to live in Yomus Chaya. But I said that, you know, some fundamentalist Christians have that view. So again, we can't have that view even if we thought that, because we can't do it. It's only if God tells us, or a prophet perhaps, you know, we can't make that decision on our own. We can't play God. So therefore, so it seems to go, this concept of Ben Sorah Amorah, Nidon al shem sofo, seems to go against our regular principle. Our regular principle is, we know by Yishmael, when Hagar was praying that he would be saved, so the angel said, what are you saving him for? Look at all the descendants that are going to come out. They're going to be terrible to the Jews. So what do you want from me? God said, Bashia Husham. I only judge people on right now. I can't judge them on what's going to happen in the future. And that's the kasha, the Gemara. When we say Hashem Hashem Kel Rachum V'chanan, the Gemara says, what are we, the double language of God, God? I am God with Rachmanis even before you sin, and I am God with Rachmanis after you sin and do tshuva. So the question is, like, why do I need Rachmanis before I sin? So Rosh says, because it's Rachmanis, even though I know you're going to sin later, I'm not going to hold it against you now. So we see, we don't judge someone on the future. So why is it Ben Sorah Amorah? So how come when it comes to Ben Sorah Amorah, we judge him on base something he didn't do yet? But the case, we'll use Yishmael as an example, we don't punish him on something he didn't do. So we gave two answers. One answer is, the difference is the Ben Sorah Amorah already started on a bad way, even though he didn't get all the way, but we see he's going to end up there, and therefore we kill him now, and he better to die Yomuz Zakai. And by Yishmael, he's totally innocent now. So if he's totally innocent now, you can't kill someone because he might change later. And A2 is no. It's nothing to do with the innocence or going on the way. It has to do with who's going to do it. By Yishmael, he wasn't doing it himself. It was his future descendants who were causing the harm. So I can't hold Yishmael responsible for his descendants. By Ben Sorah Amorah, he is responsible for... We're talking about something he will do himself, and hence... And hence, that's why he's punished. So what's the practical difference between these two answers? I say, let's say someone knew, through Nevuah, and yet you're Navi Muksak, a Navi, and says, you know, I know, I got a Nevuah, this baby is going to be the next Hitler. So again, it's all hypothetical. Can one go ahead and kill the baby, even though the baby hasn't done anything yet? Right? So if we go by answer number one, the answer would be no, because the baby Yishmael was totally innocent, and the Ben Sorah Amorah wasn't. He already started an evil, and that's why. So according to A1, even if you knew he turned out to be the next Hitler, you're not allowed to touch the baby because he didn't do it yet. But according to A2, the distinction isn't whether you're innocent or not, whether you yourself will be doing it in the future, versus by Yishmael, who is his descendants. So according to A2, you'd be able to kill Hitler or whoever. Obviously, practically speaking, we can't do it now anyway. I'm just saying, but from a high, you know, from an academic point of view, from a theological point of view, is there a concept of killing someone now who is, so practically we can't make the call. If God told us that we had, when we had Nevuah and we believed that the prophecy was true, so then that's what it would come up. But generally speaking, Ben Sorah Amorah is a unique case, and, you know, we don't have it today. So interesting. So the Ben Tzora Morer. So when it says Basher Husham, so how does the Gemara learn it? How does Chazal learn it? We're going to judge you right now, and anything that happens in the future, we're not going to take into account. That's how we've been learning up until now, right? That's what it means. We're judging you now, and we're not going to, the future won't affect your judgment. However, the way the Bali Musar learned by Sheh Husham, they learn it differently. They say the opposite. It's not a contradiction, but they say Bashir Husham is, I'm going to judge you now, and I'm not going to have your past sins play a role. In other words, up until now, the classical definition was, I'll judge you now, and anything you do in the future, I'm not going to take into account. The later commentators go to the other direction. They say, we're not going to take into your past actions. Well, obviously, we're not taking into your future. That we already covered. But not only are we going to take into your future actions, but we're not even going to... Where do we find that? Let's say, for instance, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, there's a concept of that you're allowed to do Kiddushin al Tanai. We don't do it today. But you can make stipulations in the Kiddushin. So the Gemara talks about a case. The Mishnah is, I could say, I'll marry you al menas that, you know, you're a tzaddik gomer, that you're a tzaddik. Right? So let's say someone makes a stipulation, we're going to be married only if you're a tzaddik. Right? And let's assume the lifestyle you're living does not indicate that. You're living a life of a tzaddik. So you would think, okay, great. So you think, that's it, the marriage isn't good, right?
Right.
The Mishnah, the Gemara says, no. Suffolk Kiddushin. It's a doubtful marriage, and you have to get a get. Why is it a doubtful marriage? Because maybe he had a hear her tshuva. Maybe he had a thought of tshuva. And therefore, he had a thought of tshuva, so therefore, he has a status of a tzaddik. Right?
Right.
So by the way, we see from here that clearly, we have two schools of thought in Chazal, whether someone who does tshuva, is he greater than a tzaddik, or a tzaddik's greater than him? So this opinion seems to be working with that a Baal Tshuva is greater than a tzaddik, because or else, if he's not, then there wouldn't be Suffolk Kiddushin, because if a Baal Tshuva is less than a tzaddik, so then there wouldn't be any doubt that you're not married. So either way, so Suffolk Kiddushin, because why? Because maybe he did hear, in fact, when I was a witness at a wedding once, the Mitzadik Kiddushin, not he didn't just tell it to me, but he told both witnesses to make sure you do a hirur tshuva, because the witnesses are the most important part of the wedding, so at least do a tshuva. So either way, so what do we see? That hirur tshuva means that it takes away from your past, even if you... Bashir Husham is, we're going to even though now before you sinned, but maybe you did a tshuva, and therefore you are a tzaddik. So they it takes in Bashir Husham is that God's only going to judge you right now. He's willing to ignore your past. You know, if you do tshuva now, and God testifies you're going to do tshuva, so then he'll ignore your past. So Bashir Husham, it just reminds me of a story about tshuva, Rav Aaron Leib Steinman, he was one of the great rabbis in Israel. He passed away, I guess, in the past couple of years. But he wasn't, you know, he's more like a manig, he gave advice. He wasn't necessarily the posek hador, but they used to go to him for direction, you know, on all things, you know, political, you know, Klai Yisrael things, not just paskening a shaila or that. So they say a story with him, just to get a feel for who he was. Okay. So I guess this person was, you know, so unfortunately in America, North America, the intermarriage rate's very high. So unfortunately. But in Israel, it's not as bad because I guess because of the Arab-Israel conflict, there aren't that many Israelis marrying Arab. I'm not saying there aren't any. And who knows? That was like a couple of years ago. Maybe it's much worse now. I don't know. But either way, what's not as, it's not as bad as here, as North America. And that's because, so basically, in other words, you have, it has to be a pretty bad situation in Israel if you're intermarrying versus America. So the case was, this person was thinking of marrying an Arab, and he was basically off the derech. He didn't keep any, he came from a frum home in Bnei Brak, and he went off the derech. So I guess whatever, I guess his, the cousin called the parents and said, you better speak to your kid. Like, I'm sure they have a lot of influence. And, they, you know, he's thinking of marrying a non-Jew. So, okay, so they invite him back. How about you want to come over for Shabbos? Like, remember, this guy's not religious at all, and they're in Bnei Brak.
Right.
And he said, okay, I'll come back, but I'm not going to put on any facade. I'm going to use my... Number one, using an iPhone during the week in Bnei Brak is probably a big issue. But I don't care. I'm going to use my iPhone on Shabbos. I'm willing to come back, but on my terms. They said, okay, come back on your, we'll still have you. Right?
Right.
They said, we'll still have you, and then that's it. So he came back. And then I guess during the day on Shabbos, they let him do his thing. He did whatever he wanted. And I guess the father said, I'm going to a shir now. Do you want to join me? So the kid said, who's giving the shir? So he said, Rav Aaron Leib Shtaim. He says, okay, I'll come. So he figured he wanted to come. He'll have him speak to him. Maybe he'll speak some sense into him and get him back. So either before the shir or after the shir, Rav Aaron Leib Shtaim spoke to the kid. And Rav Aaron Leib Shtaim said to the kid, I guess he said, what's going on? Yeah. He said, one of the things he said to him, how long have you been non-from? He said, about 2 years. Have you ever had thoughts of coming back to the fold? He said, yeah. He said, in 2 years, how long do you think these thoughts were? So he said, maybe about a half an hour over 2 years. He said, wow, I wish my lot was like your lot. I wish I'm going to have the Olam Haba you're going to have. Because the Gemara says, B'makam Bali Tshuva Omdin, in a place where a Bali Tshuva stands, a tzaddik can't come close to him. So, wow, you had Hirur Tshuva. Well, I'm jealous of you, he tells him. And now, which is a lie, I have something to tell someone next time someone says that to me. So he says, that's the guy he was. He was like an Avas. Okay, so that's not the end of the story. Okay, so he goes home. And then, by the way, I guess the father says, obviously I was happy, but why did you want to go to Rav Aaron Leib Shtaim's class? He said, let me tell you something, Daddy, or Tati, or whatever they call him. He said, I already had I had a previous experience with him. Clearly a good one. Also, when I was in third grade, I guess, in his school in Bnei Brak, I guess part of the testing school was that, they used to go, all the kids had to go to him, and they gave him a test. He gave them a test to see what they were learning. So, and I guess if you got the answers right, you got a candy. If not, you got nothing. So what happened was, he was in his class, so he asked him a question. He didn't know it. He asked him an easier question. He didn't know it. The guy didn't know anything, meaning this kid, right?
Right.
Okay. And everyone else knew it, so everyone else got candy. So when they were finishing, so Rav Aaron Leib Shtaim said to the kid, could you please stay afterwards? I want to speak to you. So everyone probably thought he was like rebuking the kid. So he says, you know what? when we learn Torah, it's not about the result. It's about the effort you put in. And you put in, you had three questions. You try, you might not have got the answer, but you tried so hard on three questions. You know what? I'm going to give you three candies. Everyone else only gets one. You get three. I didn't want to do it in front of them. So obviously, you know, you think the kid might have been crushed after that, you know, before. And now he built up the kid. So he already had good feelings for Rav Aaron Leib Shtaim. He knows how to speak to people. That's why it's the first time he told the father the story. So that's why I went back. So I'm not sure. I can't say for sure how the story ended, if the guy came back or not. I don't remember how it ended. But definitely, if he did, it's because his experience with Rav Aaron Leib Shtaim. And you never know when one little incident, whether it's in third grade, even when someone is totally off the derech, it's not to like push them further away, you know, it's to bring them closer. And in fact, it just reminds me on this speak, because Jackie Mason, you know, he passed away recently.
Yeah.
So I was reading an article, and actually it was on a headlines episode that even though, you know, he came, I didn't know to extent, I knew because I know his nephew, I know his nephews and nieces, so they used to talk about it a little bit. But I knew his family came from a family of rabbis. Like, yeah, you know, I'm big rabbis.
I think he talked about that in his stand-up.
Yeah, he did. He, you know, it was part of his shtick. That's why he started, he started singing different, you know, he went to, that's his joke was, yeah, I started making jokes in shul. I had more Gentiles than Jews in shul, whatever. You know, he got a lot of stuff. Obviously, basically, at one point, he was definitely more into learning, and I don't know if he was a Talmud Chacham or not, you know, it depends. But he definitely was learning. He learned and stuff, and he learned under Rav Moshe Feinstein, apparently. He might have even got smicha. So at one point, you know, and in fact, you know, Rav Moshe even appreciated him that he used to, like they say, when he had in yeshiva, he always had Jackie Mason, whatever his Hebrew name was, he called him. I don't know, Yitzchak Yaakov, whatever his name was. And he had him speak always. He had no idea what he was saying, but he knows he made the boys laugh. So he got the kids, you know, he said it's important that the kids have a good time, and he had no idea what the, you know, what jokes he was saying, but he didn't understand any of the jokes, but the kids understood him. So basically, the point was, so when he was being interviewed, he said, yeah, Rav Moshe passed away in 1986. And he said he still used to go back and speak to Rav Moshe even in the early 80s. So the point being was, Rav Moshe kept the kesher with him, and his son, Rav David Feinstein, also was very close to him. The point being, you never know when someone goes, you know, there's different drachim. Someone goes off the derech, you just, you know, you discard them. You turn them into a ben sora morer. That, you know, it's only going to get worse. Let me get rid of him now. Well, no, you see the approach of other gedolim. That wasn't the approach. The approach is, you know, no matter how far someone's gone is, the makam bali tshuva omdin. So that was the approach of Rav Ayer Leib Shtaimin, which I'm not sure. I think the guy came back, but the point is, even if he didn't come back, it doesn't make a difference. He had moments of true, and now he has a good feeling, you know, for coming back. And Rav Moshe kept his touch with Jackie Mason and that type of thing. So that's the yisod here that we said, b'makom, that this one hearer tshuva could be greater than a tzaddik, and therefore, you know, Rav Aryeh Leib was, and he wasn't probably just saying it, he probably believed it, like this person was on a higher level than he was, because he had real moments of real tshuva, that were like, why else would he come back? There was nothing forcing him to come back. He just had thoughts throughout, maybe he should come back. So to summarize, that's the yisod we had here, that Nidon, the Kashis, it's Nidon al Shem Sofo, that goes against everything we stand for, Basher Husham. So the Marsha's two answers, either because the Yishma was totally innocent, as opposed to the Ben Sohomer started on his ways, or no, Yishmael himself wasn't doing the evil, but the Ben Tzoromer was going to do the evil. We said, the Nafkamina, if you know a baby is going to turn to the next Hillel, would you be permitted to kill him? Obviously, the answer is no, of course. They're talking about if we knew for sure on that. But in theory, so according to A1, so he's innocent, so you couldn't kill him anyway. According to A2, hypothetically, you could. A2, in theory, you'd be able to. Of course, practically, no. And then we pointed out the way the classical, the Gemara and the Rishonim were in Bashir Husham is, we're going to judge you now and not what you're going to do in the future. The way the later Achronim learn is, not only won't we judge you in the future, we're not going to judge you in the past. We're not going to judge you if anything, you Bashir Husham, if you do a tshuva right now, we're going to forgive you for what you did before, and that's why even a hirur tshuva, it's a suffix kedushin, and that's the story with, Rav Aryeh Leib Shteinman, that your hirur tshuva, your schar is going to be greater than mine.